It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go, off and running on this final day of April 2024. It is the 30th day of April 2024. This is the Horn. Headon.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tube. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the Great Globe Round, and whatever time it is when you listen to the podcast. Yeah. But on the if you are listening live right now, and I'm sorry I'm a few minutes late to the broadcast. Sometimes software is hard, but everything's copacetic now and running as one might expect. Yeah, I know, Matt in San Francisco. That damn flagellate again. It's a nasty little piece of work. The flagellate, the Knutton valve. Ah, it's terrible. But we got it wrangled and got it in order, and so here we are. Live again, the final day of April. Hi, I'm Robin. I got a little gray, but it was still nice, pleasantly cool. A little very gentle rain today, and I had to go to Beckley and come back and take care of some campaign stuff. Yeah, that's still going on. Wow, 2 weeks from today. Blows my mind. The primary here in West Virginia. I would do a countdown or a count up or a count whatever, but there's no sense. I mentioned the story about the Nazis in West Virginia yesterday. They're still as quiet as a graven image. It's funny how they've got more to say about a woman's reproductive organs than they do about the presence of Nazis marching around our state capital, but, well, that's the way it plays here these days. All right, Jessica, in the greater Rochester metropolitan co-prosperity sphere. Where's your hall pass, young lady? I'm sorry, Miss Othmar. Wah, 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 wah. Yeah. It absolutely was. Randy Radar said the Knutton valve was flagellating all over the place. And the cleanup. And, at least we got the thing running and, you know, out of the hangar. Let's see if we can get it into the air. Happy birthday to our dear friend Theo out in the great Northwest. I hope you're having a wonderful day, Theo. Every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So we say thank you to our friends of the 30th day of the month. And that means thank you to Charlie, and thank you to Dave and the Blind. Thank you both so very much. Where does that leave us? Well, the month of April is rapidly ending, and we've got a little less than 3 hours. We would have had because I was late. Yeah, it was one of those dreams where you're back in school again and, you know, naked or something. Come on, let's not do that to the program this early, please. People are having dinner in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone, for God's sakes. But we are, let's see, we are down, we are at $1,220 to finish the month of April fully funded. I don't know how we're going to make that up, and it frightens me for how I'm going to, but it's always frightening every time we jump into a great big hole, and Lassie's apparently got the runs and can't go and get the sheriff, and, you know, hello? And sadly, I don't have an echo. Oh, well. Or even a reverb. But that's where things stand. $1,220. So basically, today, yesterday, Friday, last Thursday, and $20 of Wednesday remain unfunded. But hey, tomorrow is another day. If you'd like to help out, the PayPal button is at headon.live. Barring that, if you want to just go to the PayPal app, you can use my old dead name email address, Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com for the PayPal address. Patreon is available as well. U.S. Postal Service delivers mail. And thank you to you-know-who-you-are for the parcel that I was able to pick up today. Thank you so much. And thank you, Theo. That arrived today as well. Thank you. It is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, a fitting way to end this April. And we're going to get after it in short order. What's that, Lou? Arizona and Trump. Lou asked this last night, and I didn't get to it. Any idea why Trump wasn't indicted in the most recent round of state indictments? The speculation on my part, but I think I would have done what the Arizona Attorney General did, namely not indict him because he can always be indicted later, but right now the question of whether he's indictable, as infuriating as that is to even contemplate the notion that he's above the law, is an open question before the Supreme Court of the United States. And so that's probably why they didn't indict him in Arizona, because they certainly indicted all of his cronies from trying to steal the election. They might have presumed that it would just simply gum up the works for them to do it too, if it turns out that the Supreme Court rules sufficiently. The Attorney General can march right back in front of the grand jury and say, let's get him too, which would be fine by me. He was back in court today. I do grow. Well, no, that's not fair. I could say that I grow weary of talking about this. I don't. This is the most... oh, goodness me, this is a hell of a time to be alive. And like I've said before, I didn't have end of the American Republic on my bingo card. But here we are. Right. I guess the big news is that before the actual trial got back underway today, Judge Juan Merchan took a moment to say, oh, by the way, I'm going to find that you have violated the, and we call it a gag order. That makes it sound like it's something improper. We should be calling it a common decency order, or a basic civilization order, or a functioning apex primate human brain order. Bottom line, though, is that Judge Mershon found that Nitwit Nero had violated the gag order 9 times, which amounted to a fine total of $9,000, which will probably never find its way to the court's coffers, if we're being honest with ourselves. But it's not about the money. I hate that phrase. I've told the story of why I hate that phrase, and I'm not going to do it right now. But it isn't about the money. $9,000 is chump change. I mean, it's not chump change to me. Good God. What $9,000 would do in my life right now and toward the benefit of this little radio network. But in the rarefied atmosphere of the people who matter, $9,000 really is chump change. But it wasn't about the money, as I said. It's about, oh, I feel like such a Pollyanna saying this. It's about the principle of the thing. Because toward the end of his remarks, Judge Mershon said, you keep this shit up. He avoided the brown word because he's better than I. If you keep this shit up, you will leave me no alternative but to use incarceratory, no, really, and I thought I was, I thought I had fun with the language, incarceratory remedies. In other words, I will stick your ass in Rikers Island and let you have a taste of what's coming for you if you get found guilty. Incarceratory. Whew. Lord, that's a that's Jim Dandy little Scrabble word is what that is. Incarceratory. 13 letters. You could wipe out your entire set and have to wind up using other people's tiles, but. No, he said, I'll stick your ass in jail if you keep this shit up. And then, of course, Nitwit Nero, being Nitwit Nero and the orange genius that he is, he went right out and started fundraising. On the punishment.
Friend, could you please spare $3 or $5 or, $464 million? Because I'm being persecuted for my own actions, which I willingly undertook.
Incarceratory necessary punishment. Judge Mershon also pointed out that because of the structure of New York state law, which, by the way, as Stephen New York has pointed out to us on a number of occasions, can be sincerely screwed up. I mean, we're talking about Mississippi level screwed up. Judge Mershon can't escalate the fines for continued violations of the gag order. It's always going to be $1,000. He's limited. And every time he decides to fine him, it's a $1,000 fine. So basically Nitwit Nero knows that if he's just thinking about fines, that it's $1,000 a pop. That's like me with a pocket full of gospel radio paycheck quarters, standing there feeding quarters into Ms. Pac-Man over and over and over, or God knows Defender by Williams. Oh, when those little aliens that went, it came along. Oh, I was never any good at that. But he's just basically playing a game. Except for the fact that Judge Juan Marichon said the court must therefore consider whether in some instances jail may be a necessary punishment. And, like I said, no sooner had Judge Marichon done that, Justice Marichon, I think, than he started fundraising all over again. Imagine being found in contempt of court, threatened with jail, and the first thing you do is send out, he went over to Tripe Social and put out a tripe and said,
"A Democrat judge just held me in contempt of court. I was fined $9,000 for 9 gag order violations. They want to silence me. They think they can bleed me dry and shut me up, but I'll never stop fighting for you."
I'm sorry, it was an email, not a tripe. Yeah, well, I don't think anybody thinks that Judge Marichon is going to bleed him dry and shut him up with 9 $1,000 fines or even 100 $1,000 fines. And maybe that wasn't the best look to suggest to his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing minions that $9,000 really does hurt him. Among other things, Judge Marichon told him to yank the posts from Tripe Social, and they were gone by 2 p.m. today. Politico, with their account, said, "Ordering Trump to pay a fine for gag order violations is one of the more significant rulings against Trump since the trial began." And significance doing a lot of work there. "And gives the former president fresh ammunition to rail against the legal system and his political opponents. It's also a clear and simple message that can be more easily understood by supporters than appeals based on complex legal motions."
They're trying to silence me.
And so, in addition to Nitwit Nero himself, his affiliated little minion organizations jumped on it too. Because, of course, they did. And being in court has been very good for Nitwit Nero's fundraising. We're in an upside-down world. Left is right, right is left, up is down, dark is light, cats and dogs are living together. Right. And, of course, he jumped right out and started attacking the judge all over again. Like I said, those posts went down at 2 p.m. They were followed by a new one.
"This judge has taken away my constitutional right to free speech."
No, he hasn't.
"I'm the only presidential candidate in history to be gagged."
Well, I don't know. I heard that James Buchanan could let his freak flag fly here and there. But, you know.
"This whole trial is rigged. And by taking away my freedom of speech, this highly conflicted judge is rigging the presidential of 2024 election.
You heard how I read that. Here, let's do that without the stupid voice. Is rigging the presidential of 2024 election.
Election interference!
Now, to be fair, the judge said, hey, I'm fair game. Yeah, because he's a grown-up. Nitwit Nero is a fucking toddler. Yeah, right down to the pull-ups. And he said, you're free to go after the prosecuting attorney, the district attorney of Manhattan, Alvin Bragg. You can go after the charges. But you can't go shitting on potential witnesses, jurors, the court staff, or their families. Even that's probably too much, though. Now, because Nitwit Nero is adept, shall we say, at coming up with bullshit theories for why he ought not be held accountable, well, his pettifogger was arguing today that he didn't violate the gag order because
all I did was I shared things that other people had written about this crooked trial and this crooked judge and this crooked court and this crooked world and this crooked country and crooked Joe Biden. I was just sharing what other people said.
Fortunately, Judge Marchand was having none of it. And said, no, when you share it, you're saying it. Which is actually in line with case law on the issue of defamation, libel, slander, that sort of thing. The republication of a libel, the repetition of a slander, still remains libel and slander. But, of course, we all know he's not going to stop. He wants, and how this is a trial strategy, I don't know. But then again, I'm not getting the big Trump NFT dollars for making these arguments. No. But just as Hacksaw Jack Sauer argued that the President of the United States is above the law and was completely within his rights to order political assassinations of his political opponents, so too, in court today, Nitwit Nero's pettifogger said,
well, that's not, he didn't violate the gag order. He didn't say anything directly.
Which, when you get right down to it, is just the same sort of an argument that, oh, you know, a mob boss would make.
Hey, do you like baseball?
I like baseball. Well, sure, I bashed his brains in, Your Honor, but it's just because we were talking about baseball. Yeah, that word incarceratory. I think it's making Flavio and Stephen New York's brains hurt. Flavio said incarceratory. There's a simpler related word, carceral, of relating to or suggesting a jail or prison. Well, sure there is, but where's the fun in using that? The judge is a lawyer. He's not gonna use some. A word that some one of us plebs might use. Where's the point? Incarceratory, Stephen New York says this is pedantic. I know, but I think it's incarceratory. I think it's subject to interpretation. In your world, Steve, is it Triceratops or is it a Triceratops? Huh? You tell me.
That's all I want to know. As to things to call the gag order, Lee in New York says, how about calling it a disrespect penalty? That's not bad. An anti-dis order. Oh, God, we better stay out of that rabbit hole or we'll be screwed for the whole program. Steve in New York says, not my words. Now, honestly, Your Honor, I didn't shoot him with my gun. I shot him with that guy's gun. Which leads inexorably, of course, to the greatest example of all of this linguistic tomfoolery. He does not have to shoot me now. He can take me home and shoot me later. Oh, he does have to shoot me now. I say he does. Shoot me now. Bang. You're despicable. Matt in San Francisco. Incarceratory him. Matt says, I'd wear it on a t-shirt. Oh, God, if this was a wealthy program, we'd have him printed up. Incarceratory him. Incarceratory him. Send him to the penal institution. The old English major cheer at the football game. Repel them. Repel them. Make them relinquish the ball. Oh, well, okay. Steve in New York says, I was just using my What Would Rome Do decoder ring, WWRD. Well, if you're... I don't think you're getting a good signal from your What Would Rome Do decoder ring, because the obvious answer to that is Tarpeian Rock. But that's just me, and I'm weird. You know, there's a lot of talk about the Tarpeian Rock in the contemporary sources of the time. That's where they would take people who really needed to die back in ancient Rome, because they didn't really have prisons. You could either kill them outright or banish them from water and fire within X number of stadia of Rome. Stadia being a unit of measure. It shares the same root as stadium. Never mind. It's a distance measurement. But if you were a treasonous member of the patrician set, a senator or something, and you fucked up really, really, really badly, they would take you to the top of the Tarpeian Rock and say, bye, and chuck you off the Tarpeian Rock. Now, if you were just some ordinary run-of-the-mill pleb, then, well, they would take you to Crazy Dave's, and Gladys would get you all set up, and you'd be nailed right in. I mean, witness the aftermath of the Spartacus revolt. It's said that Marcus Licinius Crassus had the rebels crucified all along the Appian Way, all the way back to Rome. That had to be smelly. Yeah, I'm thinking it wasn't good for tourist trade. Muriel, look at all the dead people. And we think the Mayans and the Mexica and the Tlaxcalans and the Texcalans and the like were brutal. Yeah. No. Oh, Flavio, breathe, breathe, breathe. Accent on the car. It's carceral. I like carceral myself. Okay, Ralph's just cutting to the chase. Send him to Alcatraz. I may be a squooey wabbit, but at least I ain't going to Alcatraz. I love how that cartoon ends with the bunny hop and Elmer Fudd in a bunny suit. Things on my brain cells. Like tears and rain, I'm telling you, like tears and rain. Yeah, Lou points out car care, C-A-R-C-E-R, car care is the Latin. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. Never a bad time for a good Latin reference. Curiously, Lou adds, Trump says if he's elected, he'll prosecute Biden, even as he argues presidents have absolute immunity. I can't help but wonder if he's ever actually pondered the fact of what might happen if he was actually correct. Because if he did, and he still had the brain power to do it, he'd spend every waking moment looking over his shoulder waiting for SEAL Team 6. Because his own lawyer, Hacksaw Jack, made the argument that, well, Joseph Robinette Biden has that power right this instant. But see, that's the difference between Joe Biden, one of many, between Joe Biden and Nitwit Nero. Joe Biden actually studied the Constitution, knows the Constitution, thinks the Constitution is a pretty good idea. The same cannot be said of Orange Julius Geezer. Yeah, that business about prosecuting Biden came from a Time magazine interview with Nitwit Nero. Dear God, these poor once vaunted magazines that are now reduced to online scandal sheets. They'll give him an interview if he'll just say something outrageous that they can use to sell pixels. When he was asked at first about Biden, Nitwit Nero said, I wouldn't want to hurt Biden. I have too much respect for the office. Implying no respect for him. But then when it got down to discussing his demands for complete immunity, he said, if they said that the president doesn't get immunity, then Biden, I'm sure, will be prosecuted for all of his crimes. Yeah, which would be zero, to be fair. Maybe, if there's any justice in this universe at all, we'll all get to yell, lock him up, lock him up. At him when he finally gets perp walked. Read an article earlier today about the fact that jurors aren't looking at Nitwit Nero when they come and go from the courtroom. They're not making eye contact. And that's said to be a good sign. They're not awed by his presence. They're not overwhelmed by his celebrity or his celebrity, since we're going to argue about accents on syllables this evening. This afternoon, the prosecution called Keith Davidson, who at one point in time was the lawyer for Stormy Daniels and Playboy playmate Karen McDougal. He was there to recall his conversations with David Pecker, who, by the way, Stephen Colbert pointed out, bears a striking resemblance to the guy on a can of Pringles. Not wrong. So, in recounting those moments and talking about editor Dylan Howard, who, not Pecker, but Howard. Well, they shared some of the text message and email exchanges they had before the 2016 election. And jurors smiled quietly to themselves. Chris Jansing talked about it on MSNBC, and I think she was rather enjoying it as well.
Of what's happening inside the courthouse, because according to Laura Jarrett, jurors have been smiling as some text messages have been read. They're between Dylan Howard, who was the editor-in-chief of the National Enquirer, and Keith Davidson. Remember, he's the attorney who represented both Stormy Daniels and Kara McDougal in their deals for hush money. She said jurors are smiling at all the profanity-laced text messages between Dylan and Howard. I will not read those to you. But in the end, Davidson said that the deal was frustrating for everybody involved. Davidson says to Howard, "Yes, I believe so. I told Cohen, Michael Cohen, this never would have happened without you." And the text back from Howard of the National Enquirer to Davidson was, "He's hopeless. Oh, well, another one done." From inside the hush money trial, our reporter also says that former President Donald Trump was whispering back and forth with his lead lawyer, Todd Blanche, today, urging him to make stronger arguments about the evidence that can and can't be admitted. That comes after just this morning, the New York Times reported that Trump has been complaining that Todd Blanche, quote, has not been following his instructions closely and has been insufficiently aggressive. Mr. Trump wants him to attack witnesses, attack what the former president sees as a hostile jury pool, and attack the judge, Juan M. Mershon. Keep in mind,
Yeah, get in here. I want you to get some of this contempt action, too. Take the heat off me.
Yeah, this is the old Jerry Clower routine from long, long ago about the guy and the guy and the wildcat up in the tree and yelling, "Knock him out, John! Knock him out, John!" He says, "Well, I might hit you. Now, I don't care. One of us has got to get some relief." What's that, Matt? Matt and Sam lined up to yell, "Lock him up." Matt says, "Oh! Can I bring tomatoes?" Matt, never underestimate the power of a rotten head of lettuce. They're smelly and wet and squishy, and they hit. But yes, rotten tomatoes, rotten watermelons, soggy cantaloupes, musk melons. Let's bring the whole garden. Yeah, he's pissed off at his lawyer because his lawyer actually knows how to be a lawyer, actually knows how not to piss off a jury, but he wants him to attack, that's right, the jury. And he wants him to attack the jury. Yeah, fire him, dipshit. You do not have to fire him later. You can fire him now, and we say fire him now. Insufficiently aggressive. Well, I've seen photos of Todd Blanche. Blanche! Guy looks like looks like a serious dude. He's never seen smiling. His mouth's always turned down at the corners. It looks like he said harumph to his client several times. You better save your phony baloney job. The New York Times described his nitwit Nero's fits as episodic wrath. Now, somebody's dropping the dime on him because the Times said that he's been going off during phone calls. about him being insufficiently aggressive. The Times said, well, you heard Chris Jansing. But that goes to the monumental ego behind the minuscule mind of the defendant. There's something about people with autocratic impulses that they think they're the very best at everything. Maybe it has something to do with narcissism. I don't know. He's also pissing and moaning to friends about the amount of money Todd Blanche is charging him. And in the Times story, they said that sometimes Nitwit Nero refuses to pay his lawyers. Well, all the news that's fit to print. Who would have imagined that he's out there, that he has occasionally stiffed his lawyers? My stars and garters. Meanwhile, counsel for the parking garage is nowhere near the election interference hush money trial. But she's doing everything in her power to virtue signal her undying passion for her orange client. Oh, by the way, as we approach the close of the first hour of the program, where does this go? Where does the time go? Ralph's has put $25 on the table for Justice Mershon making Donnie cry. So if you want to celebrate, if you want to celebrate the ire of Mango Mussolini, well, kick in $25 and Ralph's will double it to $50, and we'll be down to less than $1,200. Well, we'll be down to $1,170 to go in this desperate attempt to finish April fully funded. But yes, Alina Habana, counsel for the parking garage, is telling anyone who will listen how gosh darned angry she is. This was in conjunction with a question as to whether maybe he'll actually follow the gag order now. Naturally, it wasn't on a reputable news network. It was, of course, on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. So, yeah, grain of, well, ocean of salt.
Do you think that we're going to see a change in his behavior because he doesn't want to deal with this, because he doesn't want to risk going to jail?
I don't know. I think the president is trying to speak for himself and is frustrated because the gag order.
The president is in Washington, D.C. And I don't know. Maybe those frosted highlights have gotten through your scalp and into your brain, but Joe Biden is the president of the United States, and your client is just a private citizen, but, well, we know that. And the things she doesn't know are...
I would have you remind the American people it's not just for the president. It was for the president and anybody in his control, campaign, anybody else. How are you supposed to operate? He can't go on the campaign trail, and he's operating at the highest level you've ever seen. Look at the poll numbers. They keep trying to stop him. He'll find ways to fight back. But quite honestly, what I'm seeing is so inappropriate, so unfair, and so one-sided. I don't know how he can stand it, to be honest. It's hard for me to stand it as his attorney. And we respect law. But we also respect the Constitution, and there has to be a change right now.
Tomorrow,
a change in the Constitution, really? 44 presidents before him and another after him have gotten along just fine, but we've got to change the Constitution for her boyfriend. I mean, former boss. I mean, former client. Yeah, there. That's the word. And we thought it was ridiculous when Condoleezza Rice goes great with Condoleezza Chicken. accidentally called George W. Bush my husband, or the president. Ah, yeah. But yes, Council for the Parking Garage is having a hard time putting up with it. Then again, this is this very same Council for the Parking Garage who complained bitterly about all those judges out there who are trying to make her look dumb.
The fact is that you now have to argue the constitutionality of his own gag order in front of him, and then he tells the Trump lawyers that they're losing credibility in his courtroom. I'm sorry, this judge has no credibility.
Yeah, this is the same methodology that judges have done.
Mythology?
With me.
Myth,
and
yes.
And the left-wing media, they'll run with it. They try and make attorneys on the team look or seem like they don't know what they're doing. They know that the press is in the room, and they kind of play into it. They'll say things, you know, I'll speak to my experience. You know, for the lawyers out there that'll understand, I was putting in something in evidence, and it was impeachment evidence. It wasn't introducing something blindly. And the judge was making comments that would make the press believe that I didn't know what I was doing, saying, you know, you need to read the evidence. And I was looking at him, and I remember thinking, you're doing this on purpose. You're doing this in front of a jury. You're doing this in front of the press. And the jury is impressionable. To them, the judge runs the court. So they do this intentionally today with Mr. Blanche to say to Todd something like, you're losing credibility because there's no case law on a president being gagged and his First Amendment rights being taken away. But let me tell you why there's no precedent on that. There's no precedent on that because it's never happened before. So they're asking.
Yeah, because no president has ever behaved in such a toddler-esque fashion as to require a warning to shut the fuck up in his criminal trial.
You got to back up things that you can't because it's never happened in this country. If you want to get precedent, maybe we need to look in Mexico or somewhere else where this would happen. But it doesn't happen in this country. And I think it's intentional. I know it is. They do it. They've done it to me. And
they've done it to me.
Try and berate and ridicule the attorneys. And it's really pathetic.
Well, honey, you took the job. You took the money. When you take the money, we get to talk about what taking the money makes you. You know, like a hired gun. Or a hired hun. We can look in Mexico. Every time she opens her mouth to the media, every single individual who actually has a law degree and tries to work decently and honorably with it from that draw spunky school of lawyering is, oh no, here went another 10 or 15 clients. Hey, did you graduate from the same law school as the counsel for the parking garage? Never heard of her. Oh, you did, huh? Okay, well, I'll go find some other lawyer. She got brutalized for that. Someone said on social media, I kept screwing everything up. The judge was so mean. He kept telling me how wrong I was and how there's a process. Another individual just said, honey, hush. Be very quiet. But imagine being a lawyer who has been elevated to national profile, who doesn't understand that she really should have sort of reiterated to her client, because listen, the position of lawyer and client is the lawyer is actually superior in knowledge and experience to the client in legal matters. And a good lawyer will say, sir, listen, shut the fuck up. Let's see if you've ever heard these words. You have the right to remain silent. If you choose not to remain silent, everything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. I mean, that's kind of the origin of, that is the origin of criminal defense attorneys telling their clients to shut the fuck up and not make matters worse for themselves. But that's too much for the Trumpian toddler to be able to sort out. Now, on the one hand, I said he was sending out fundraising emails. And just a moment ago, we got another statement from them. I'll share that in a moment. Stephen, New York, Alina Habana. I don't like any of the people here. However, I would gladly give credit to a good lawyer, no matter whom they represent. However, this WFT, or Trump, is a sad caricature. The worst part is that she has no idea how truly bad she is and how foolish she looks and sounds. Well, there's a reason for that, Steve. She admitted to a TV network, the world, God, and everybody, even the multi-limbed amorphous aliens of Norblap 9, that she'd rather be pretty than smart. And since she got her wish, she is oblivious to the fact that she did, in fact, get her wish. I mean, this seems like a real go brush your hair kind of moment for counsel for the parking garage. Oh, Micah, sis, I know. Can they please take away his phone and toss his ass in jail now? No, but he's making it more and more likely that that will eventually be the outcome. And he's going to be surprised. I don't know what kind of conversations they've had in the past, but he's going to be surprised when Justice Mershon sends him to Rikers Island. I mean, there's got to be another jail in New York. Maybe it won't be Rikers Island. And he says, I'm not going. Tell them, Secret Service. And the Secret Service guys all reach into the breast pockets of their dark suits and, Your Honor, we brought our toothbrushes.
Ooh.
He thinks he can interlocutory appeal his way out of it. That ain't how contempt works. That's why, despite all the grunting and chuffing and barking and pissing and moaning, back when a federal district judge found sister clerk Kim Davis in contempt, and Matt Staver of that tax exempt lawyer in grift, what is it, Liberty Counsel, sit, Your Honor, the next time you talk to your client, she'll be behind bars, and she has the key to her own cell, and she can come out anytime she wants to. Carol Lenig, over at the 11th Hour, talking to Stephanie Ruhle, said that Nitwit, it's already taking a horrid toll on Nitwit Nero's state of mind, and he's having a hard time fundraising. Well, thank God he got an email out fundraising on his contempt citations today.
It was shady, and anybody would have known it, and the bank flagged it.
Carol, let's talk about Defendant Donald. Your colleagues at the Post point out that more than anything else, This trial has taken away Donald Trump's control over his daily life, his comforts. This is a guy who's never even worked for anyone else or been on anyone else's schedule. How much is that affecting him?
Donald Trump hates it. Absolutely hates it. I mean, this is a person who, when he was the president's staff in his first days in office, was able to basically blow through the norms of how a president normally operates every morning. They usually have a very early schedule. They start a presidential daily brief reading with their CIA briefer. President Trump said, you know what? I don't really feel like doing that. I feel like staying in my robe in my room for a few hours in the morning
and, calling all
my friends and finding out how I'm doing politically and what they think about what I said on television the other day. He basically put off all the big responsibilities of being president to work on the political machinations of amping up his popularity. So this idea of him being in a room where he cannot speak or he's not supposed to speak, he has actually spoken a few times and gotten scolded by the judge for muttering under his breath about a juror, for talking out loud and out of turn. The idea that he's not only constrained to this room and constrained to these rules, but not able to speak up the way he's so used to doing, and getting flattered every time he does, it's sort of sucking the energy out of him every day. And my colleagues report that he's in a horrible mood, and it's hard for him to sort of do donor events afterwards or talk strategy after the sessions in court, because he's just so livid.
Clever Carol remembers that back during the Trump administration, when anyone would say unprecedented, I would charge them $2. So there she is saying blowing through the norms. I see you, Carol, and I'm still concerned.
Yeah, okay. And I suppose these are all anonymous confidential sources that none of these reporters will disclose, but the thing it tells us is that people inside his defense are having significant conversations with reporters who have a very, very wide readership and a broad electronic reach. Horrible mood, huh? I'm not upset. Now, as to his mood, we've crossed into the second hour of the program. The lines are open. Skype line, Robin, R-O-B-Y-N, Kincaid Horn. If you've never sent me a contact request that way, feel free. And the stress line, of course, 844-843-4676, remind us periodically. Named for the immortal Bill Mr. Stress Miller, bluesman extraordinaire, who at one point in time was married to a woman who was a psych nurse. And he got his onstage persona name from the code word they would use at the psych hospital where his then wife worked. When someone was melting down, they'd say, Mr. Stress, to room whatever. Yeah, stress line, 844-843-4676. But now that we have kind of thrown the rules about diagnosing at a distance to the four winds, well, one psychologist is trying to ring the alarm bells. Dr. John Gartner, who is a practicing psychologist and a former assistant professor at Johns Hopkins University Medical School, said, you know, it's not a big deal for a guy of Nitwit Nero's age to be taking impromptu snoozes. But in this particular circumstance, it's worrisome that he can actually doze off and then fart himself awake. in the middle of the trial about his own liberty. Dr. Gartner spoke with Chauncey DeVega over at Salon and said his trial in Manhattan is providing more evidence of his apparent cognitive decline. Speaking to Chauncey DeVega, he elaborated and said, Trump fell asleep 4 out of 6 days of his own trial. Falling asleep is not in and of itself particularly specific to dementia. I fall asleep at dinner parties because I'm old and work too hard. Bill Clinton was famous for it. But can you remember a criminal defendant repeatedly unable to stay awake at his own trial? I can't. It's obviously very rare. Most people are pumped full of adrenaline when they're there in the dock. On the other hand, he said dementia patients rather frequently pass out. He said, this may be the first criminal trial I've been aware of where the defendant appears, in my opinion, to have dementia. Is it a coincidence that it's also the only one I've ever known where the defendant can't remain awake most days? Trump appears to be losing control of his basic biological functions. One is sleep-wake. And I guess this is the appropriate time in the program to cite the sage of South Carolina, Stan. Todd. Y'all, he ain't going to make it. I mean, just a reminder, we are just starting the second full week of trial, not counting jury selection. We are one day in to the second week of testimony. And he's already cracking under the strain. Dr. Gartner continued and said, the trial is really a form of psychological torture for a malignant narcissist. Well, there's a diagnosis. Who needs to appear powerful. Instead, he appears small, confused, and helpless. One senses this ain't going to end well. And he's trying to bravado his way out of it with whatever outlet will give him a platform, among other things. He has said that, no, he won't commit to no violence depending on the outcome of the election in November. And it just got worse for him today. It gets worse for him every day, and that's what's crushing him. He ran off to an appellate court to demand that Judge Juan Merchan be thrown off the case. He's also demanding that the trial be paused until the Supreme Court rule on his presidential immunity claims. To that, too. Because, of course, the hush money election interference case has nothing to do with anything that happened while he was in office. It's all pre-electoral. And of his own choosing, Judge Merchan asked the New York Judicial Ethics Board to check in and see if he should be off the case. And that board said, nope, we're good. You're good. And Nitwit Nero still appealed it. And the appeals court said, no, sit down, shut the up. And he's desperate for coverage. I mean, this morning, This morning he showed up on a TV show in Detroit. I mean, I know Michigan's important. I'm not selling anything short, my Michigan friends. WJBK-TV, team coverage, action news, eyewitness now news, whatever. I guess he's going to, since there's no trial tomorrow, Wednesday, he's going to go to Tittabawassee Township, Michigan, or maybe Tittabawassee, since we've been working on the emphases of syllables this evening. And he did a short interview with a guy named, a news anchor named Roop Raj, in which he wanted to blather about Venezuela. And he was not apparently prepared to deal with the journalistic talents of Roop Raj of WJBK-TV in Detroit.
Of crashing into a kid's birthday party, killing two and injuring almost a dozen others, faced a judge briefly today. What happened during that court hearing? That's straight ahead.
Robin, also ahead, an exclusive one-on-one with former President Donald Trump. Our own Roop Raj sat down with him this morning to talk about everything from labor to EVs to abortion and a possible debate with President Joe Biden.
Because we're desperate for content at WJBK Fox TV Local Channel 2.
In Detroit, we'll have more from their sit-down coming up. Brandon?
And in the aftermath of the NFL draft, people are weighing in. How did Detroit do so well? It is now...
Hold the on! They just tucked the former president of the United States in between... A tease for a story about a driver who killed people and how the Detroit Lions did in the NFL draft. O tempores, o mores. My goodness gracious sakes alive. Oh.
A top destination in the world. We're going to have the details.
Working for you. Fox 2 News live at 11 starts now.
Good God, he didn't even rate morning drive. They put him on mid-mornings.
I guess we'll expect more visitors, right? Well, good morning. Thanks for being with us. I'm Amy Lang.
And I'm Brandon Hudson.
So, despite juggling several unprecedented legal battles, former President Donald Trump remains focused on his return to the White House. At this time, numerous polls...
Really? He remains focused? How did you say that and not fall apart in laughter, local anchor?
...show Trump with a slight edge over Joe Biden.
The presumptive Republican presidential nominee spoke with Fox News' Roop Raj just this morning about a number of key issues that made his...
I mean, honestly, he hasn't been able to remain focused since they took his Adderall away. And his 12-pack of Diet Coke a day.
Your Honor, can I have a potty break?
...inside the election, including abortion and protection of the southern border. Take a listen.
In 2016, you really kind of ran your campaign talking about abortion in one way, in a more restrictive manner. In 1999, when you were a businessman, you said that you were pro-choice and you think it's up to a woman. It changed in 2016, and then again, it seems like it's flipping a little bit again. Give people an idea as to what's going on. Are you following your convictions or following the polls?
No, I'm following my convictions, and what we're doing is with states' rights, I also follow the law. And when you got it into the states, it's states' rights, it's the state will decide. Now, the state is deciding through votes, and the votes are going to be, in some cases...
It's states' rights, and with states' rights, the state will decide, and what they're doing is the states are deciding, and they decide through votes. You suppose there's any radishes in that word salad? Onions? A little bell pepper's nice sometimes. I think there's plenty of cheese.
tougher, and in some cases, very loose. I think Michigan's going to actually be very loose.
But what about the six-week ban? No one seems to want that in the liberal circles or even the moderate circles here in Michigan.
That's right. They're going to vote against that. They will. In my opinion, that's what they'll do. One stat before we go. Venezuela was very crime-ridden.
Wait. Huh? What? Man, that's a segue for the ages. Yeah, I mean,
that's what they're going to do. How about that Venezuela?
Venezuelan abortions? Carpe diem? A carp is God? A fish is God? What? And in the video, he's kind of squinting at the screen. And Roop Raj apparently has him on the ropes.
They announced the other day 72% reduction in crime in the last year. You know why? They moved all their criminals from Venezuela right into the good old USA. And Biden let them do it. It's a disgrace.
But, sir, where are those numbers coming from?
Uh-oh. No one knew that Roop Raj was going to ask him such a hard-hitting question. Where are those numbers coming from? 70% reduction in crime? Because they shipped all their criminals to the United States and Joe Biden left. Where'd you get that?
Sir, where did you get that number?
I guess I get them from the papers in this case. I think it's a federal statement they're coming actually from Venezuela. They're coming from Venezuela.
Definitely Venezuela. Venezuela, slow in the driveway. Definitely. Of course, this is not my underwear.
We'll have to check on that. But, Mr. President, I want to say thank you so much for joining us here today. And we hope you'll come back and we'll do a debate with President Biden here in Michigan sometime soon.
I'll be there. Thank you very much.
No, he probably won't. What's your source?
I didn't know he was going to ask me hard questions. Who told him he could ask me what my source? What?
Thank God he didn't ask him which papers, because he would have given the Godzilla from Wasilla answer. I love them. Micah said, Fox 2 News, yeah, that tracks, LOL. I listen to them fairly often. Driving in the car with Haley, and she said, holy subject change, Batman!
But I wanted to talk about Venezuela.
Because he knows that he's going to that Michigan voters will hand him his ass on abortion and very possibly punish the Republican Party for what they have done. Good God. I'm sorry. He ain't going to make it, y'all. But he's got to, he'll take any win he can get at this point in time. So after throwing a conniption a bit,
I want to be there for my son's high school graduation. He's worked so hard.
Well, today, Justice Mershon having hit him with $9,000 in fines. He had to give him it's something he could feel good about. So today, Justice Mershon said the court will be in recess on May the 17th so that he can go to Barron's graduation ceremony. And, I'm not a betting girl, but if I was, he's not going to Barron's graduation. Come on. Or if he does, it'll be,
friend, I had to take a day off from my crooked trial to attend Melania's son's graduation. Can you spare $3?
As to his source, Stephen New York says, his big fat ass. Yes, he yanked it there from Steve. WJBK, information coming from Herman. Yeah, that's the Fox station in Detroit. Who could have possibly... Yeah. Fox 2 News, eyewitness team coverage. We're here for you. By the way, Michael Cohen pointed out that as far as he knew, and he would be in a position to, Tangerine Tiberius had never attended any of the graduation ceremonies for his kids. On the other hand, Frank Runyon at Law 360 said, yeah, he went to Eric the Dumber's graduation in 2002. How do I know, Runyon said? I was there. We were classmates at the Hill School. Speaking of schools, Lee in New York advised me earlier don't judge the school someone went to. Nitwit Nero and I went to the same school at different times. I left. He was kicked out. Yeah, but remember, counsel for the parking garage is now persona non grata at her Draw Spunky School of Law. I wonder if he realizes that... Nitwit Nero, that is. I wonder if he realizes that people will actually be paying attention, and by people I mean the court, to see if he actually shows up for Little Baron's graduation. And no, Steve, I haven't. Steve said, have you heard anything about the appellate bond? Not a peep. Not since the last. And I think it's still up in the air. The source, WBFA. W big fat ass. Okay, I get it now. Lee in New York, Barron's graduation. Which golf course is it at? All right. Emilio, I think the real question here is our states deciding? I hear there's 170% decline in crime in Venezuela.
Venezuela, they used to call it Crimezuela.
Okay, that was a flurry of Rama-Lama ding-dongs. She's right there, Rama. She looks down on the program. And when I say she looks down on the program, there are moments when she really looks down on the program. She's a classy llama. And there's... actually, more stuff going on out in the wider world than just Nitwit Nero's trial. Hey, y'all, a few days ago, how about this? Net neutrality got restored, huh? No, it just happened to occur at an unfortunate part of the news cycle, which is any part of the news cycle right now. I got to tell you, I got a giggle out of this one. This was kind of precious. Do you remember when Was it Kevin McCarthy, back before he was defenestrated, told members of the maggot carcass to stay off bicycles and not do dangerous things because at one point in time they barely had a majority at all because of, well, things like enterprising Sunday beer-drinking Republicans in Florida climbing up on the ladder to clear the gutters and finding themselves on the ground and unable to come back to work for weeks on end. Well, they didn't heed the warnings. And so that means several members of the maggot carcass Could,
if there's an unfortunate accident,
it could cost the Republicans the majority because some of these maggots have decided to, and I am not making this up, they've decided to go skydiving to commemorate D-Day on June the 6th. No, really. Several maggot members are going to mark the 80th anniversary of D-Day by jumping out of World War II airplanes with parachutes onto the beaches of Normandy. Oh, Jesus, the performativity of it all, please. Can we get some flak bursts around them just to make it real? They're not actually going to jump where the 101st Airborne jumped, because that was actually behind enemy lines and in hedgerow country. And it came at a terrible cost. Kathy Stetch Ferrick at the Wall Street Journal wrote about it and said, it could precipitate a legislative crisis, noting it took two tries to impeach Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas due to GOP absences. More exits could, in theory, cost Republicans control of the chamber to Democrats before the next elections. To the point that Representative Nicole Meliotakis of New York, a maggot, was joshing around with Mullah Moses Mike Johnson and said, "Tell him, no bungee jumping, no swimming with sharks, no skydiving." But yes, they're skydiving. But in Ms. Ferrick's article at the Wall Street Journal, she said, even routine sports can pack a punch, as seen when Representative Bob Latta of Ohio, 68 years old, was wheeled into a recent houseboat with his foot in a boot courtesy of a pickleball mishap. One of these days I'm going to bother to find out what pickleball is. But it seems to be a phenomenon that's taking the country by storm. His spokesman said it will not impede his ability to dutifully serve and represent his constituents. But he sucks at pickleball. I added that last part. I wonder if the maggots who are going to jump out of the planes on the 80th anniversary of D-Day are trusting other maggots to pack their chutes. Other maggots like, say, marginal trailer queen. New York City courts chair sniffer hired, API Newsflash. The New York City courts have officially hired a chair sniffer to determine when the fecal content of defendant Trump's courtroom chair has reached dangerous levels, requiring a
brief court recess for sanitary compliance, maybe? Thank you, Todd. Utley in New York, the GOP parachute packer. Oh dear, this comes with audio. This comes with audio and video. Yeah. Well, Lee said the GOP parachute packer. I immediately thought of this For Imprint ad. Working.
Here's your parachute.
Packed it myself.
Certain it's okay?
Mm-hmm.
Are you For Imprint certain?
Certainty matters, like the certainty of congratulating coworkers or saying thank you for being a customer with promotional products from 4imprint. Our expert team is dedicated to making your satisfaction a certainty.
Packed it myself.
Land the perfect products at 4imprint.com.
4imprint for certain.
Unpaid product placement for 4imprint there. Geronimo, says Lee. Wait, that does not sound like a real American name. Y'all are feeling silly tonight, aren't you? And there is an abundance of silly to feel this evening. Okay, pickleball. I thank you for the serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Pickleball Research Department. Ralphs has sent me a link to a search on pickleball. Thank you. Jimmy in the Great Northwest, pickleball, we're the same age. We played pickleball in middle school in the 70s in gym class. Did we call it pickleball then? I remember battle dodgeball. That was brutal. And horrifyingly, at least for me, I remember shirts versus skins basketball. Okay, so I'm not good at Scrabble. Lee says, stop it, Robin. I do not know where you will ever be able to make a 13-letter word on any Scrabble board. Lee, double word score in New York City. Yeah, I realized as soon as I started counting the letters. Okay, Emilio says pickleball is a lamefully smaller version of tennis. I just know that there's one of those investment ads that's got a couple of babies playing a couple of grown-ups on a... I don't know. Lee's really banging on all eight tonight, this afternoon. Counsel for the parking garage, she's circling the block looking for a spot. Yes, she is stopped from stopping. Well, we've made it past the halfway point of the program. Ralphs has the Hooray for Judge Mershon challenge on the table. And that would get us down to $1,170 in terms of the deficit for ending April. That's tough, but it would be great if someone would kindly match that if you are able. I know it's the end of the month. It's hard on everybody. And by the way, there was some actual governing going on today. there was a hearing in the House Oversight Committee, which is basically a wholly owned subsidiary of Bedlam, Inc. And Office of Management and Budget Deputy Director Jason Miller was the witness of the day. And at one point in time, Representative Jerry Connolly had sincerely had enough with representing Scott Perry of Pennsylvania. And it got, shall we say, a mite testy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Director Miller. I want to talk to you about Executive Order 14019 and your involvement in the implementation of that. Does OMB have a strategic plan to implement that executive order? So there is a plan, and you just have to get it to us, or you don't know of a plan, or what's the situation?
Again, I'm going to take that back and make sure that I get you a precise answer.
Okay, and assuming that there is a plan, can Congress have all of that unredacted? Would you commit to that at this point?
Again,
let me ask you this. The United States Attorney General established a procedure for educating felons on how to register to vote, how to vote by mail, those type of things. And you, as you probably know, there's a federal Bureau of Prisons, and federal felons are ineligible to vote. Why would we have a plan under Executive Order 14019 to educate these folks ineligible to vote on how to vote and how to proceed with that? Why would that be? Do you know?
Congressman, I would have to direct you to the Department of Justice for the specific.
You have to. So you're not going to do any oversight yourself on it. You're not going to look at what they're doing and inform Congress. You're not going to do any of that.
I'm happy to have my team follow up with yours on the specific concerns and on the specific actions by DOJ. I would have to refer you to.
Okay. How about this one? What actions are you taking at OMB to ensure that people that are here illegally aren't eligible to vote under this executive order?
Time out. This is the Office of Management and Budget. Was Representative Perry just so hungover that he didn't realize he wasn't talking to somebody from DOJ or DHS? This guy's a bean counter. He probably collects pocket protectors. He probably came to the hearing today wearing his good glasses, you know, the one that doesn't have the adhesive tape and the paperclip through one side.
Actions are you taking or have you taken in your office to ensure that people residing here illegally are ineligible to vote under the provisions?
I mean, for the love of Christ, there's no action to take. People residing here illegally are not eligible to vote. Hell, people residing here under a claim of asylum who are here legally aren't eligible to vote. This guy, I don't know, is he putting lighter fluid in his vodka for the touch of flavor? This is just the rabbit hole down which they live.
Rolled out by this administration under this executive order, knowing that they have to have a strategic plan submitted.
Congressman, I'm happy to take back your questions and your concerns and make sure I get you a precise answer. I'm happy to talk about my purview as management at OMB and the broad set of management priorities that we have been implementing.
Advised about that. Mr. Connolly from Virginia.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Miller, what's your timeline for making sure Ukraine wins the war?
Again, Congressman, I'm happy to talk about the topics that are in my purview as the Deputy Director from the
Ministry. Oh, that's not in your purview.
Got it.
All right. Then I won't belabor you with questions that are not relevant to your purview.
Sick burn, y'all. All that blathering for the wool hats back at home from Scott Perry and it gets reduced to ashes by one deliberately dumbass question from Jerry Connolly. Good man, Jerry Connolly, by the way. And then, also during the same, and I love any moment that this, any moment I get to run a clip by Jasmine Crockett, Representative Crockett. Well, suffice to say, she's a freshman in this Congress, the 118th, but she asks questions like she's been there since God was a baby. And, you know, don't mess with her. She will eat you. It's like the punchline to that old joke. That dog would bite you. Oh, she will tear you. She will tear you a new one.
There were some questions posed to you specifically about debt, and there seemed to be a concern about the mounting debt. And I am going out on a limb, and I am going to ask you if you are aware of how much debt we added under the Trump administration out of curiosity. If you don't know, I know off the top of my head, but something tells me you may know.
I have an imprecise number. I think you have the precise number in front of you, so I don't want to give you the imprecise number if you have the precise number.
No. Give me the imprecise.
No, please.
Well, I'm going off of my head because that wasn't part of what I was supposed to say. But long story short, $8 trillion. Was added under the Trump administration. And so I think that it is important that we focus on making sure that we're keeping our debt under control, but I think it's also important that we're honest about how that debt is accrued and make sure that we don't continue to make the same mistakes. I know that the election was brought up and there are those that are standing by their man, but they also seem to be concerned about debt, which seems like the two don't go together because we know that their man actually is really good at running up the credit card debt for this country because he likes to give tax breaks to his very rich friends, which means that we don't get as much money coming through the door when they are not required to pay their fair share.
She is so good. The only thing I would add is the better burn might have been to say tax cuts for his friends who are a lot richer than he claims to be. Yeah, he would have hate watched that over and over again at his tacky ass penthouse or down in Mogoloco.
So I just wanted to make sure that we put that out there first and foremost. I recently was appointed to the Weaponization Subcommittee. And so I'm going to have plenty of long days ahead of me, kind of like what I have here on oversight. But the point of the Weaponization Committee was to have a conversation about the government being weaponized in a way so that people could somehow get some personal gain, because there's this theory that this administration has somehow weaponized the government. There is not this acknowledgement that the other guy just is a criminal, because that's just too hard to believe. Even though he currently is sitting in New York facing criminal charges that were not brought by the federal government, but instead by state government. Nevertheless.
Isn't she good? Because she served, I think she served as a prosecutor. I know she's been a legislator in the state of Texas. And as the old saying goes, she understood the assignment. Oh, and by the way, cutting to the heart of the matter, Tracy explains pickleball to Roxanne. It's tennis for the uncoordinated and unathletic. Well, I need to learn to play. But it makes you feel like you're exercising. Tennis players are mad pissed because it's taking courts away from them. Oh, Muffy, we can't go to court today? Because of those pickleballers? Oh, God, it's the same thing in the winter when we go to Vail or Stade. You want a nice little slope to shush down, and it's all taken up by these vulgar children with their snowboards. Oh, God. There's not this acknowledgement that the other guy is just a criminal. Oh, he'll be hate watch. He'll hate watch that just the same, right? And I feel like this deserves, because we've been keeping up lately. It turns out that Christy the Gnome is the gift that keeps on giving, or the killer that keeps on killing. Over at the Late Show, God, it's almost unfair. If it wasn't for the fact that she's such an odious maggot, you would be tempted to say that there should be some rule of decorum wherein professional creators of comedy shouldn't be able to go after the less fortunate. Who here knows about Bluey? Bluey is an animated children's program. My grandchildren absolutely adore Bluey. B-L-U-E-Y. Now, the pros over it. Bluey's a dog. And the gang over at the Late Show with Stephen Colbert, oh, they just savaged Christy the Gnome. By the way, over on my Filthy Morning Habit, I actually messaged Micah up in Michigan about this morning, because she had been asking me, do you think somebody really listens to it? I said, I don't know, it's probably coincidence, but sometimes I wonder. And so if you check the show post for like Friday, there's a reference to where the red fern grows. And along the way, I've mentioned Old Yeller. I don't know about y'all, but if you're of a certain age, you were traumatized by Old Yeller. Oh, what a horror. That poor dog. And I will, some things just stick in your brain, and I'll never forget walking through Kroger's one evening. Unpaid product placement, y'all. Walking through Kroger's one evening to see that, complete with the Disney logo, there was a brand of kibble had been introduced called Old Yeller brand dog food. And I remember pointing it out to Annette and going, did they ever see the movie? That might make your dog so doggone well fed that he goes out and takes on a panther with the hydrophobia. And we know how it ends. But anyway, no, there they were making an Old Yeller and a Where the Red Fern Goes reference this morning on my Filthy Morning Habit. Those crazy kids, that wacky morning zoo crew. Did some other things, too. Maybe we'll get to that, because it's just, ugh, gross. But, no, it's a late show. Jesus, Bluey.
South Dakota Governor Christy Gnome, considered to be in the running to become former President Trump's pick for vice president, is responding to the backlash over a story in her upcoming memoir. In the book, Gnome says she shot and killed her 14-month-old puppy named Cricket for bad behavior.
Bluey. God, it juxtaposes the little dancing Bluey dogs with Christy Gnome. Christy! Walking into a gun store, sighting down a shotgun, and then it shows the crosshairs of the scope on Kablooey. Maybe she's got some sort of thick reptilian skin or something, but there's nobody out there defending her. No one. Even the I haven't even seen where Nitwit Nero defended her, and he hates dogs. He's the entire reason that she included that anecdote about puppy slaughtering. Jesus! So then this morning, we get, well, this.
Who believes she helped her vice presidential chances by saying that she decided to shoot a joyful... this is not how Big Yeller or how the Red Fern grows. It's not how either one of those ended. This is sort of... Goodfellas meets Old Yeller, and I don't think America likes that ending.
That was quality. Goodfellas meets Old Yeller.
My dad was from Houston, Missouri, a very small town. That's where we lived.
Joe Pesci is Cricket in the room. Oh, no. Bang!
When I was born, my mom had to go over to Rolla, a little bitty town near Houston.
I know
Houston
where Rolla is.
Because there was no hospital in Houston. I can assure you that this was really insulting to most farmers and ranchers in America, because this is not how they would handle it. And everybody understands the realities of farm life and that there are...
You know, this is just indicative of politics in 2024. The fonted banner underneath Claire McCaskill, former senator from Missouri, reads, Governor Kristi Noem stands by decision to kill her dog. Huh? But again, 2024.
There are sometimes different rules for livestock than you might think of for family pets. But really the damning thing here is that in Trump world, in MAGA world, she actually believed this would help her. She actually believed that showing this kind of brutal cowardice and brutal dominance over an animal would somehow elevate her in the eyes of Donald Trump. Because make no mistake about it, this is all about this book, everything she's been doing for the last 9 months is all about trying to become vice president. I put on my Twitter account last night. I don't know if you guys remember the episode on Succession where Roy Logan did the bore on the floor game, where he made grown men scramble around the floor for a piece of sausage. That's what I feel like the vice presidency contest is. That Trump is going to have a bore on the floor exercise for all these guys at Mar-a-Lago, because they're all diminishing themselves with what they're willing to do to try to stand by his side, and it really is sickening.
You know, Mike, as I often say, I'd like to associate myself with the remarks of Judge Jeanine, which is to say that Americans, if nothing else, ice cream, the laughter of children, puppies, in a divided nation, these are the things that bring us together. Yeah. And to Claire's point, it is pretty staggering that Governor Noem thought, I ought to slip this into the book. Maybe Donald Trump will like it. And the number of people who must have read that manuscript, did anyone say, hey, maybe take that line out? I guess not.
Well, what is the line, though? If you look at the line, she took the dog on a death march. She walked the dog to a gravel pit, and then shot the dog. That's
Jesus,
intense.
A death
That's
march.
That's like malicious.
I mean, no disrespect intended, but does she refer to the gravel pit as Bataan?
It's intent, and it's like walking a dog to the dog's death. Incredible that anyone would have not looked at that manuscript and said, hey, this is a death march for you if you print that in your book. But she did.
And then she did it to a goat.
But to Barnacle's point, it's not that nobody read the manuscript and said, hey, maybe take this out. You have to take into account the people she runs around with. They are all brutal, bloodthirsty maggots, including one of the most obnoxious, and as Steve Schmidt referred to him, serial sexual abuser, sexual assaulter, and overall obnoxious human being, Corey Lewandowski. And what I think Barnacle didn't understand is that everybody who read that manuscript looked at her and said, "Oh, Christy, that's awesome. The boss is gonna love that." Remember the video of him with the bald eagle?
If you read on in the book, she decided that while she's at it, while she's on this murderous rampage of killing innocent pets,
murderous rampage.
I'm just going to go after the family goat because I don't like the way the goat has butt up against my kids and made their clothes dirty. I'm not kidding. Grabbed the goat,
missed it the first time.
Brought it into the ditch, shot the goat, and then realized that she missed and only injured it, and while the goat writhed in pain in the ditch, she went back to look for ammo.
Kids are eating their Captain Crunch.
I wish I was joking.
Sweetie, he called her sweetie. He really is regressing, you know? And later on the program, we would find out just how much he has regressed. I don't think I've ever heard that Jehoshaphat refer to Mika as sweetie. What's next? Sugar? Honey pie?
She should have just done what we do with Red Sox pitchers in the bullpen that don't work.
That's the second straight day of references to Red Sox relief pitchers.
Send them to Worcester. Yeah, Worcester.
There's so many good choices one could have made.
Send them down to Springfield, that. Where we don't have a program. Just drop them off there. Jim Van Dyke, tell me about you.
And frankly, if this ends her political career, I mean, but there is a history of American politicians and animals. It was actually 60 years ago this year, maybe just a week or so ago, that Lyndon B. Johnson caused outrage all over America by picking a beagle up by its ears. But that's the difference between the America of 1964 and the America of 2024. In the spring of 1964, America was still reeling from the horror of the assassination of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. And then when the guy who stepped into his shoes, having been his vice president, picked up a beagle by the ears, America was like, "Oh, no. Yuck. Do better, Lyndon." But America also understood that he was an old school redneck from Texas, and that people in Texas probably pick up beagles by their ears. But then again, to his credit, Lyndon Baines Johnson didn't pick up the beagle by its ears and take a .44 Magnum and press it to its skull and pull the trigger. In 2024, among certain members of the maggot contingent, that's exactly what you do. If what happened in 1964 had happened in 2024, yeah, that's exactly what Christy the Gnome would have done. I always thought gnomes were supposed to be, well, they're not like trolls. They're kind of innocuous. No, this, everybody run. The gnome from South Dakota has a gun. This country. It it says something about the fact that this story, this particular story, has had legs for 5 days now. Does anything else have legs? Like, probably ought not say legs. Pause. Flavio, honey, sweetie, honey pie, pork chop. Pork chop? Reminds me of that Valentine that Dim Leader sent to Laura once upon a time. Roses are red, violets are blue, my lump in the bed, how I love you. I don't know how Laura felt about that, but if I had a hubby and he looked at me and called me lumpy, I wouldn't feel like that was a term of endearment, but, well, who am I? Something happened on MSNBC yesterday that was rather remarkable. You don't often see a politician of the stature of Nancy Pelosi, who proved to the world that she is still a badass, take down a both-siderism whataboutist, in this case, Katie Turr. Oh, my heavenly days. Before we get to that, though, thank you, Billable. We've got, as I said, Ralph's Justice Mershon made Donnie cry challenge. That's $25. And I had a note from Billable Rick a little bit ago. Tax refund challenge. I just received my federal tax refund for 2023, so I'd like to make the following challenge. I will unconditionally pledge $40, which can be applied to any extant challenge. So Ralph's challenge is met. And then if somebody else will kick in $40, I'll throw in another $40 for a total of $80. Hornistas, let's give Lassie a break and get Robin out of the hole ourselves. Carpe diem. Fish? God? God's a fish? What? Thank you, Billable Rick. That's so kind of you. So, 4 people at 10, 8 people at 5, 5 people at 8, 10 people at 4, whatever. If we can come up with $40, Billable will add 40 to that, and let's see. So, that's... That would get us down to... $10.85, if my math is correct, and amazingly enough, I think it is. And we've got about 54 minutes to do that in, $40. And that means we'll start May only in a $1,085 fundraising hole. Thank you, Ralphs, and thank you, Billable Rick. I know the end of the month is a tough time, but for 20-plus years, it's been a tough time keeping this little independent broadcasting effort on the air. And somehow or another, we've managed, and we've kept it all going. And thanks to everyone who has helped do that along the way. So anyway, on Katie Turr's segment on MSNBC yesterday, one-on-one with Representative Nancy Pelosi. And maybe Katie Turr didn't know what would happen when she got all whataboutist and both-siderist with the greatest speaker of the House of Representatives in modern memory. She faffoed. Yeah, she found out.
Experience with Donald Trump. Do you think it's obviously different from his experience, rational?
Well, what do we care what Bill Barr says? What we care about is what the candidate for president of the United States says. And he says it with great bravado. He even says if you beat up a media, if you beat up the press, I will pay for your legal fees. So again, those who care about the Constitution and who have studied all this have said, how can you say that a president can commit an illegal act and not be accountable for it because he's no longer president. Person could do whatever he wants to do and adjourn, resign, and then he's free off the hook. So this is really, I mean, if this court doesn't rule in the right way, we have real concerns about our democracy and the three branches of government. And we have to take a look at term limits for the courts or something, but that's neither here nor there. Right now, it isn't know what Bill Barr's interpretation is, if he thought he heard it or didn't hear it. What it's important is what Donald Trump has said. Donald Trump is a great threat to our democracy. What is a democracy? What are the pillars? What are the pillars? A free and independent press to tell the story of what's going on, to keep everybody informed of what people are saying and doing. That transparency is essential. A independent judiciary. An independent judiciary, when they're practically threatening on TV exposure of jurors in a trial of the president or any trial and any of that. What is an independent judiciary? It's about free and fair elections. And what do they do but suppress the vote? So there's nothing in his performance, if that's the word we'll use, what he has done that would indicate that he cares, prioritizes, or ever valued or did anything to support a democracy. And now on the ballot saying he should have immunity from whatever he might do. I mean, really, I have sympathy and respect for everybody who votes. I'm glad people vote. I know some of them will always reject those of us who might look different to them in leadership or the rest, and that's that. But there are those who have real legitimate concerns about immigration, globalization, innovation, and what does that mean for their job and their family's future? And we have to address those concerns. And Joe Biden is doing that, created 9 million jobs in his term in office. Donald Trump has the worst record of job loss of any president. So,
and that includes W. Bush, and that's a deep hole to dig your way through. But you'd think Katie Turr, based on the fact that she said that Representative Pelosi said, who cares what Bill Barr thinks? You'd think Katie Turr would have maybe figured out that this was not the right day to mess with her. She didn't.
But we just have to make sure people know.
That was a global pandemic.
He had the worst record of any president. We've had other concerns in our country. If you want to be an apologist for Donald Trump, that may be your role, but it ain't mine. And
I
he
don't
has
think
the worst.
That anybody can accuse me of that.
And we no, but let me just say, as a Speaker of the House, we put forth a $3 trillion bill, $3 trillion of investment in communities and the rest, and that is stimulates the economy.
I just want to ask one more question. This one's on Speaker Mike Johnson. There's talk about a motion to vacate. If there is one, would you vote to help him save his seat?
I'll take my lead from Hakeem Jeffries, our great leader. He was so masterful in how he did what he had to do in order for us to get this vote for Ukraine, Israel, Taiwan, all the elements of that legislation. So he's our leader, and he will make a determination. Question is, how does the Speaker, in addition to passing the bill, and I've given him credit, and I've gotten criticized for giving him credit, how does he honor the commitments that are involved there? But I'll leave that up to our Hakeem Jeffries, who's a magnificent new leader in our party, and he will give us his guidance on that.
Represents Brooklyn. Madam Speaker,
yes,
thank you.
But I was in Brooklyn with him last night.
Thank you very much for joining us. It's really wonderful.
And then she stood up, and Nancy kindly handed her ass back to her, and they went to break. But there was a global pandemic? What? And to her badass credit, Representative Pelosi didn't obfuscate or offer any excuses. She could have buried him, but instead she decided to school Katie Turr for engaging in probably one of the most odious journalistic sins of the electronic multimillionaire for-profit media. But both sides. But what about the pandemic? Because, you know, if Nancy Pelosi had had another hour, she could have absolutely parked that one in the cheap seats. She could have broken a windshield in the parking lot outside the stadium. What about the pandemic? But there was a pandemic, but. As if everything that Nitwit Nero did that made the pandemic worse suddenly disappeared down the Orwellian memory hole? Please. But good on you, Nancy. She's a tough bird. And of course, lest we forget that there is a long-standing issue with Republicans and gun violence. Dick Cheney's got a gun. 2009.
Dick Cheney's got a gun. Dick Cheney's got a gun. The safety's come undone. He's squinting in the Texas sun. Put a bullet through. They say when Cheney goes to Texas, you'll find him hunting, fishing, yeah. His daddy had it coming, cause when Cheney's got a gun, he's just not that good at taking aim. Cheney's got a gun. Dick Cheney shot someone. She and better run. Better watch her liberal buns. Tell them that the war's not through. They'd probably put a hole in you. He tracked a little bitty birdie, hoping to blow out its brains. They say the spell that he gets under from double barrel thunder makes his ass pop out.
It's been since there's been a Cindy Sheehan reference. Thank you for that, Irish Dave. Thank you very kindly. Oh, God. And since Representative Pelosi was talking about, or fielded a question from Katie Turr about the ongoing tenure, shall we say, of Mullah Moses Mike Johnson. Well, Marginal Trailer Queen has just found herself neutered. Hey, be glad you were only neutered, Marge. If you'd been with Christy, it could have been a lot worse. Following the lead of Hakeem Jeffries in exchange for supporting actual an actual fight for democracy. Well, the Democrats will help Mullah Moses Mike keep his job in hopes of taking the majority away from him in 2024 and winning the gavel fair and square for Hakeem Jeffries. Marge tried to bring her motion to vacate the speaker up. And when she did, well, Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries was waiting for her. It was almost like it was all planned out or something. He said, "We'll vote to table Representative Green's motion to vacate the chair. If she invokes the motion, it will not succeed." Leader Jeffries issued that statement in conjunction with Minority Whip Catherine Clark and Democratic Caucus Chair Pete Aguilar. They said, "At this moment, upon completion of our national security work, the time has come to turn the page on this chapter of pro-Putin Republican obstruction." Ow! And that can't have felt too particularly good to even Mullah Moses Mike himself, who has in the past opposed aid to Ukraine. And CNN said that they the Democrats had a caucus meeting on Tuesday and then made their statement, which led the maggots to say, "Well, the motion to vacate the speakership is dead." Because Marge can't find anybody to play with, not even the guy with the giant forehead who does rails of Viagra while chugging Red Bull so he can have sexy time all night long. For all we know, with underage 17-year-old girls, he's paid to romp with him. You know, Matt, it just gets worse. He said, "Well, I oppose a motion to vacate at the current time." And then the woman with whom he was alleged to have had one of those torrid affairs, perhaps fueled by Viagra and Red Bull, we'll never know, Representative Anna Pavlaguna, also of Florida, said, "I think that's pretty much not going to happen. We're at too much of a slim majority." Because she's so sharp. She went on and said, "I don't support what he's doing. He went back on his word to us," you know, supporting a desperate existential struggle for democracy in Ukraine. "However, I'm not going to risk giving the gavel to a Democrat." Now, the demon dentist of the desert, Paul Gosar, as well as Thomas Massie, who got emasculated by AOC a couple of years back, they signed on with Marge, but nobody else wanted to play. NBC News said numerous conservative lawmakers who have blasted the recent Johnson-blessed spending bills and foreign aid package said, as the House returned from week-long recess, that they aren't ready to support Green's push to remove Johnson. They cited a number of reasons they worry it would disrupt GOP unity ahead of the election. They fear there isn't a better replacement. There's the number one fear. Who the wants the job? And they believe it had failed due to a thinning majority, and some say that the time just isn't right. So after it became obvious that she was going to be utterly humiliated, Marge, of course, threw a nutter. Having some staffer write a lengthy screed and post the excrement over on X, she said, "Every day I fight the Democrat agenda destroying America, and I fight for an America First Republican agenda." You know, America First. Which has its roots in Nazi sympathizing. "Mike Johnson is officially the Democrat Speaker of the House. Here's their official endorsement of his speakership." She had posted the statement from Jeffries and Clark and Aguiar. He should resign. No, wait. I'm sorry. I missed a part. Oh, the geese are going home to the pond this evening. Ah, the bucolic wonders of rural living. What slimy backroom deal did Johnson make for the Democrats' support? Well, it wasn't slimy, and it wasn't done in a back room. It was done right there in front of God and everybody, and even Sporkfoot herself. He should resign, switch parties, and continue voting for Biden's open border invasion of America, endless wars, full-term abortion on demand, trans agenda on children. Had to get the trans agenda in there, didn't you? Warrantless spying on the American people, weaponizing government against President Trump and his supporters, and every other Democrat wish list item he's handed over. Oh, Jesus, honey, take a pill. I hate to break it to you, Marge, but he wouldn't be welcome in the Democratic Party. He's a theocratic fascist. He just actually knows how to do this a little bit better than you, a lot better than you, hon. If the Democrats want to elect him speaker and some Republicans want to support the Democrats' chosen speaker, I'll give them a chance to do that. Oh, you're going to give a chance. Good for you. I'm a big believer in recorded votes because putting Congress on record allows every American to see the truth and provides transparency to our votes. Americans deserve to see the Uniparty on full display. See, Uniparty, Unabomber, see what she's doing? Oh, she's so clever. I'm about to give them their coming out party. She's going to be surprised when she finds out she doesn't get a party. She apparently doesn't know what tabling a motion means. It means that it won't even be heard. There will be no debate. It's just going to be... Oh, this is probably an unfortunate phrase to use, but it's just going to be put down. Like Christy Nome with a 14-month-old puppy. Oh, but Marge is so mad. And she'll fundraise like hell off of it, too, and probably bring in $1 million from, or a couple of $1 million from the mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing denizens of Maggot World. Dear sweet fake baby Jesus, she's a dum-dum. And in the meantime, Representative Pelosi also showed up on the Morning Zoo crew, who maybe had already seen oh wait, old story, never mind. But she's been making the rounds and she's kicking ass and taking names. Getting back to Manhattan for just a second. After the contempt finding, by the way, just a reminder, there's an opportunity to knock down funding for the program by 80 bucks. Billable Rick will put forward 40 more if 40 comes in, having Billable having already met Ralph's Justice Mershon made Donnie cry challenge. 40 more comes in, Billable doubles that for his tax return challenge. But no, after the contempt finding today, the prosecution made matters infinitely worse for him. when they said, Your Honor, we're going to need another Sandoval hearing. Recall that the Sandoval hearing is a hearing to provide notice to a defendant of questions about which he may be queried upon cross-examination should he decide to take the stand. And so the next Sandoval hearing, which will be held, will be as to all of the egregious threats and grumping and griping and moaning and pissing and that he's been doing on social media. Prosecutor said, Your Honor, we're ready to go right now. But Todd Blanche said, we haven't even read it yet. Justice Mershon said, read it. I think he's getting a little tired of the bullshit. His prosecutors said, we ought to be able to elicit evidence about the defendant's harassment online of Michael Cohen and Stormy Daniels in light of the opening statements. Todd Blanche, who for all we know had been lambasted in the ear by Nitwit Nero for not being aggressive enough, said, we'll cross-examine about bias, sure. We should be able to present evidence that we get and get a final ruling immediately. It must have really stung when the prosecutor said the gag order violations display a, quote, consciousness of guilt on the part of Clementine Caligula. And said, Your Honor, could we please have some input from you by Thursday? And the thing is, if that's the case and they get that answer on Thursday, then court watchers say that there's a distinct possibility that, well, the star witnesses, either Stormy Daniels or Michael Cohen, or one after the other, will appear on the stand shortly thereafter. Must see TV, right? Oh, and by the way, going back to Katie Turr for a moment, Flavio points out, Katie Turr is subbing for Andrea Mitchell. Flavio observes, that says it all. Well, can you imagine what the questioning would have been like? Had it been left up to Mrs. Greenspan. Oof. Dadgummit, browser froze up. Emilio, your MTG voice is indistinguishable from the real one. Not really, but it's as good as a real voice should sound. Yeah, I like to imagine Marge's voice as Marge Simpson on bad acid. Getting the browser restarted. We haven't really talked much about Palestine today. This is disgusting, but it tracks with everything that I've ever said about what's his fuck it, Ben Gvir, the national security minister of the fascist Israeli government. He has made statements of late, Ben Gvir has. Remember, this is one of those guys who's a proponent of the Israeli version of From the River to the Sea, only the river he's referring to is the Euphrates. This punk-ass fascist little prick is also a man who threatened the life of Yitzhak Rabin shortly before he was assassinated. Hebrew outlets Channel 12 and Ynet published his statements. They were translated into English by the Times of Israel. This is disgusting, but it's also exactly who they are. The IDF chief of staff, one Lieutenant General Herzi Halevi, gave a briefing to the fascist ministers of the Israeli government at a security cabinet meeting last week about the ongoing slaughter in Gaza. And during that briefing, Lieutenant General Halevi said hundreds of Palestinians were recently arrested when they surrendered to the military. And that's when what's-his-fuck Ben Gvir, the vulgar, vile, putrid little fascist, said, "Why are there so many arrests? Can't you kill some? Do you want to tell me they all surrender? What are we to do with so many arrested? It's dangerous for the soldiers." And the Times of Israel said that General Halevi was flummoxed and said, "Dangerous for who? We don't shoot people who come out with their hands up. We shoot those who fight us. There's no dilemma here. Those who surrender, we arrest." I'm not sure I take that at face value, but here we are. And at some point in time, Agriculture Minister Avi Dichter looked at what's-his-fuck Ben Gvir and said, "I don't know whether you're a minister in Israel or a different country." And Dichter formerly ran Shin Bet, the security service, and is in his own right one of the fascists in Psycho Bibi's fascist cabinet. Some of this shit probably sounded better in the original German. Earlier this month, Ben Gvir suggested that Palestinian captives be executed. He said it on social media. He said slaughtering some of the unarmed captives would relieve prison overcrowding. At the same time, roughly, he had said that he wanted to build 1,000 more prison places for Palestinian captives, and at his suggestion, that suggestion was approved. He said, "The additional construction will allow the prison service to take in more terrorists and will bring a partial solution to the overcrowding crisis. The death penalty for terrorists is the right solution to the overcrowding problem. Until then, glad that the government approved the proposal that I brought." See what I mean about the original German? Of course, this is nothing new for this bloody little Nazi. It was February when he said, "There cannot be a situation in which children and women approach us from the wall. Anyone who approaches in order to harm security must receive a bullet. Otherwise, we will see October 7th again." The account that I'm looking at features a photograph of what's-his-fuck Ben Gavir hugging on Psycho BB like they're the best of friends, which they probably are. Goes without saying that under international law, murdering unarmed prisoners is a war crime. And that's on top of the 34,000 dead, at least 22,000 of whom are women and were women and children. Verb tenses are important when it comes to genocides. And by the way, just a reminder, Ben Gavir leads something called the Jewish Power Party. He comes out of the Kahane movement. Israel itself banned the Kahane movement in 1998 for being a gang of terrorists. Ben Gavir has been convicted in Israel 8 times. 8 times on charges of incitement and terrorism itself. He's a fanboy of a guy named Baruch Goldstein, a settler, an Israeli-American settler. And in 1994, Baruch Goldstein took a gun and slaughtered 29 Palestinian individuals at the Cave of the Patriarchs. That's in Hebron. It is sacred to both Muslims and Jews. Don't know why it's not sacred to Christians. It's all Abrahamic, right? But now that I've shared this story, look around on American multimillionaire for-profit media and see if any word of this, an Israeli cabinet minister and dear friend of Bibi Netanyahu talking about wanting to slaughter Israeli women and Palestinian women and children, of wanting to slaughter unarmed Palestinian prisoners of war. Maybe check in on the Morning Zoo crew in the morning and see if Joe's pontificating about that. You'll be waiting a very long time. Today was Grandpa Joe pontificating and burbling about those awful students. And then, I kid you not, comparing a break-in at one of the buildings at Columbia last night to January 6th. Oh, look, they're breaking glass. What does that look like, sweetie? That looks like January the 6th. No, it didn't. It didn't look anything remotely resembling January the 6th. And while law enforcement in places like Texas are bringing in literal cavalry to overrun protesters, there were also some protests at, George Washington University. The protest at GWU in D.C. was peaceful. And the D.C. Metro Police got it right. They did absolutely nothing. A spokesperson for the D.C. police said, this activity has remained peaceful. He said that by way of explaining why the D.C. police had not gone in and mass arrested student protesters. Jesus. It's not that hard. George Washington University tried to call in the D.C. police. Descriptions of the protests at George Washington said it looked more like a street fair last week. And the police said, okay, we'll send some people over, but we're not going to come in and bust any skulls. Sociology professor at GWU, Ivy Ken, said they definitely made the right call. Professor Ken had signed a letter protesting the suppression of demonstrations nationwide. Another professor, Dane Kennedy, who is a professor emeritus of history and international affairs, whose own history includes anti-war protests at Berkeley in the 70s, said their encampment at the plaza does not interfere with the regular operations of the university in any way. I applaud the D.C. police for refusing to intervene. By the same token, I'm appalled and embarrassed that GW's administration has expelled peaceful student protesters. It sends a really shameful message about its disdain for students' rights. Again, you won't hear anything about this in the multimillionaire for-profit media. Melanie McAllister, a professor of American Studies and International Affairs at GWU, said, I think the D.C. police were right to refuse to arrest peaceful protesters. But even militant chants and radical signs have First Amendment protection. The D.C. police seem to know that. And so, at the same time that Jehoshaphat and Sweetie and the rest of the Morning Zoo crew were blathering on about, this is just like January 6th. The D.C. police, who were involved on January 6, 2021, who know exactly what January 6, 2021 looked like, said, nah, this ain't it. And just to sort of flesh this out a little bit further, at least at The Nation, they are getting it right. A headline on an opinion piece by P.E. Moskowitz saying, the attacks on the Palestine movement are getting stupider by the second. And P.E. Moskowitz said, I would never say I expected more from Arkansas Republican Senator Tom Cotton, as that would have required me to expect anything good from him, but I still found myself surprised when he referred to the Columbia University protests against Israel's war on Gaza as a form of pogroms. Nor did I expect more from the Wall Street Journal, which ran an op-ed arguing that Hamas and Hezbollah are working with and grooming pro-Palestine activists. Nor from Benjamin Netanyahu, who compared the campus protest to Nazi Germany, because anybody who brings Bibi a cold cup of coffee is a Nazi. Nor from House Speaker Mike Johnson or Anti-Defamation League President Jonathan Greenblatt, both of whom called for the National Guard to be sent to Columbia. The university, not the country. And, of course, they brought on Jonathan Greenblatt on the Morning Zoo crew this morning to provide backup for the demonization of student protesters. But Moskowitz went on and said, "Yet I have been consistently taken aback at just how ridiculous these and other claims from the media and politicians about the growing pro-Palestine movement have become recently." And, you know, it's not just the right wing that's doing this. I mean, Randy Rhodes got sucked in the libel. That to be opposed to a genocidal slaughter in Gaza is the equivalent of being pro-Hamas. Jesus, truth really is the first casualty of war, isn't it? I mean, honest to God, objecting to a country's warfare strategy that finds acceptable the wholesale massacre of 22,000 non-combatant women and children, and that's supporting Hamas? I mean, great God in heaven! Did people like Joe Scarborough and Mika learn nothing from 2004? When Republicans ran around saying that if you don't want to slaughter Iraqis, Iraqi women and children, whom we did slaughter, innocent non-combatant Iraqis to the tune of over 1 million human beings, that if you opposed that, you were pro-Al-Qaeda? Well, P.E. Moskowitz says, "Politicians and the mainstream media outlets that support you are consistently simplistic in their analyses, or flat-out wrong, or, well, stupid. But over the last few weeks, it feels like the stupidity has ramped up to a level previously unreached, a level that can no longer be described as misinterpretation or obfuscation or spin, but rather as a complete detachment from reality. I tune into my filthy morning habit every day, wondering when Eddie Glaude Jr. might be in there to set him straight. Or a couple of the other sane voices that don't want to jump up and down and heap dead burnt body with veins in their teeth and yell, 'Kill! Kill! Kill!'" Moskowitz continued and said, "This condition of near psychosis appears to be spreading. It's not just the far right that's responding to largely peaceful protests with extreme rhetoric and action. College administrations have sent in police in riot gear to arrest peacefully demonstrating students and faculty, suspended or expelled students, canceled graduations, and even hastily barricaded their campuses with plywood in a fashion that feels both barbaric and Wile E. Coyote-esque. To understand this state of unreality, it's important to understand that the United States and the elite media are nearly always, to some extent, in a state of unreality. We've known this for a while. Noam Chomsky and Edward S. Herman outlined the process by which Americans become unwilling or unable to confront the violence endemic in American life, whether the violence of U.S.-backed wars in other countries or the violence of corporate-backed plutocracy at home, way back in 1988, and makes reference to the now classic tome, Manufacturing Consent. Since October 7th, politicians and leading media outlets have made it clear over and over again that they consider Israeli lives to be worthier than Palestinian ones. Now the media's relentless focus on Columbia and other college campuses is proof in itself that it cares and, crucially, wants us to care more about any perceived victims of the protests in the U.S., even if their victimization consists of not being able to teach a class on classical music, as they'd prefer, especially if they're from elite institutions, than they do about the lives of Palestinians. In closing, Moskowitz says, this is why it might be more useful to see their delusional rhetoric as not only a form of propagandistic misdirection, but also a tool of linguistic power and control. By reframing disagreement and protest and discomfort as violence, those in power get to play victim and thus feel righteous in their use of or support for actual violence, whether that's the bombardment of Gaza or the brutality inflicted on U.S. college students. As Sarah Schulman brilliantly argues in her 2016 book, Conflict is Not Abuse, this strategy has been used for ages by those with privilege to hide their power over and fear of those they oppress. We can see it in, for example, the rape accusations leveled against black men by white men that led to lynchings. Sometimes when we're upset, we pretend or convince ourselves that conflict is actually not only abuse but a crime, Schulman writes. When we have nowhere to go but inside ourselves, and when that self that we inhabit is convinced that it cannot bear to be seen, we call the police. As Schulman notes, this strategy has been perfected in the case of Israel, which has consistently used the legitimate generational trauma of the Holocaust and legitimate fear of continued anti-Semitism as a way to obfuscate and justify violence against Palestinians. That is solid analysis. Well, Randy Radar, thank you so much. I congratulate you for bringing this story, and thus I'll pledge $40 for the match, and you can use my name. Yes, thank you. I appreciate that, Randy, so very much. When I see stories like the one about Ben-Gvir and what a monster he is, and I know that it will not get coverage in the multimillionaire for-profit media, well, to say that it is infuriating is to say the very least. To say that it is dangerous and fuels an ongoing genocidal urge is to say something far more important. So thanks again to Billable Rick, and thanks again to Ralps. That means we've gotten down to 1085. That's the hole we're going to finish April in. And as I said, T.S. Eliot wasn't wrong. April is the cruelest month, it turns out. But we'll keep plugging away. But there are $1,000 of bills easily right now that were due today and that have an impact going forward into May. Kill, 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 Lee in New York says. No, we need the Dalek version. Exterminate, exterminate, exterminate. Yeah, exterminate has a much more profound and long-lasting impact, doesn't it? And the hue and cry coming up from my filthy morning habit this morning was just... Oh, I was almost embarrassed for them. I don't know if they actually legitimately believe what they were barking and grunting, or if it's just the editorial choices coming down from the suits upstairs. I don't know. The suits can be brutal. When the suits want something, the suits get something. and the multimillionaire for-profit corporate media. So that's it. Prayer meeting Wednesday tomorrow. I think I've got the lead story for that already. Suffice to say, it's gross. Did I have someone on hold? Oh, I'm so sorry. I got wrapped up in the story, and I apologize. If you want to, whomever you are, if you want to try again tomorrow, I'll get there. I apologize. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thanks to our challenge makers and the respondents there, too. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Roger, in the chat room. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, please, like each episode of the podcast if you listen to the podcast. Subscribe on a couple of platforms so you never miss one if one of the platforms screws up. Leave a comment here and there. It really does help build the numbers. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Remember, please, if there's anything you want to get from White Rose, and there's still a lot there, download it before June 1st, because on June 1st, after over a quarter of a century of almost single-handedly keeping progressive talk alive on the Internet, Ben Birch is hanging it up and putting the white roses out to dry. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, 25 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Please stay safe. Find out when you get your next booster. Wear your mask if you're around the maggots, because they bark and grunt and spew a whole lot. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Carry it with you, pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance as best you can. And if Sporkfoot happens to come towards you babbling about how they made a slimy backroom deal that they made in full daylight in plain sight for very obvious reasons, well, avoid her like the plague, because she is. And always, 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 Wayne and Gina, it's all for you. Later.